A Whimsical Number from Abbey Road, 1969, Maxwell's Silver Hammer. I want to mention the song that went into the break. And we do like to mention and give a shout-out to the artists we use for our bumper music, because they do contribute to help make the show what it is. That was Joe Walsh, All Night Long, which could sort of be our theme song for this program. The great Joe Walsh, I should say, and I mention him especially because he's a regular listener to the program, and every once in a while he'll call in. He doesn't announce that he's Joe Walsh, but he does, so we're glad to have him as part of the Coast to Coast family. Got a little situation here, folks. We're supposed to have Richard Dewhurst come on the program to talk about his book, The Ancient Giants Who Ruled America. Mr. Dewhurst is nowhere to be found. We're calling his number, and it doesn't work. So, Richard, if you are listening to this program, your phone is busted and doesn't work. We're trying to call it, and you're not answering. If you're a neighbor of Richard Dewhurst or you got an email address for him, you might want to send him a note or go bang on his door and tell him he's supposed to be on a coast-to-coast radio show right now to talk about his book. In the meantime, Dr. Melba Ketchum has agreed to stick around for a while. There were a whole bunch of people on the phone lines with questions for her, and she has graciously agreed to stick around and answer your questions. And we ran the numbers again, so if you want to call in and talk to Dr. Ketchum about Bigfoot or DNA research or the pursuit of evidence for giants, she's going to be here for a while. So anyway, sorry about this situation, and we'll still talk to Richard Dewhurst if he can find a different phone that works. But in the meantime, we'll be talking to Melba right after this break on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Melba Ketchum, long time no talk. thanks for sticking around.
This was unexpected.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of people who were on the phones who wanted to talk to you anyway, so it's good.
And
it's
good with me. Them, so yeah. Let's get on with it.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's go to our first-time caller list, Doug in Cincinnati. Hi, Doug. You're on with Dr. Ketchum.
Hey, I'm going to talk real fast because I got a lot of stuff I want to get in. But
all right.
First, Dr. Ketchum, is that your name?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to give you, just keep doing what you're doing because of a personal experience I had in 2005. Forget what naysayers say to you. They do exist. Bigfoots do exist, and you already have the DNA proof to prove it. All you need is the funding to shut all the people up. Secondly, you know, people always talk about, you know, getting photographic and film evidence. I'm a graduate of like broadcasting school, so I studied video and audio, all facets of broadcasting. And before I say anything, could anybody confirm, has the Patterson film ever been officially debunked?
No. There's people that have tried, but there's always something else that makes it where they just can't do it.
Because I studied that extensively in broadcasting school, and people don't know, like, what a gold mine the Patterson film is for a couple of different reasons. One, people don't know that it was shot in 16 millimeter, and to this day, that is one of the best video formats ever shot on, like in terms of like video enhancement. It doesn't lose like really any pixelation. Uh-huh. So when you blow up the Patterson film, you see things that you really just have to see it to believe. Like, you can see this thing's gender. I mean, I won't go into detail, but
And have you noticed the muscle hernia on the thigh?
Yes,
whenever she moves, that's not a suit. That's a muscle hernia.
Well, I can prove it for another reason. That film was shot in 1968. Okay, let's go back in 1968. Now, if that was a person in a suit, that suit was state of the art. So what was state of the art in 1968? You got to go Hollywood. It's always cutting-edge special effects. So the two movies that I refer to that was released in 1968 were The Planet of the Apes and 2001 Space Odyssey. Now, what I saw in the Patterson film did not look like Roddy McDowell. And
no.
Okay, so that's my proof right there. And just a little word based on the experience that I saw with my Bigfoot sighting, that I hear Bigfoot researchers, you know, they talk about how they're going to find Bigfoot. And I wouldn't advise looking for Bigfoot, but if anybody is, I can tell you they're going about the wrong way. And I can
really
tell you. If a person is looking for Bigfoot, all you got to do is follow the deer, and eventually you will see a Bigfoot.
Hey, Doug, I appreciate your input. I want to mention about the Patterson film. Last week, someone sent me a stabilized version of the film. They've done some work on it. Didn't change the content except making it easier to watch. We posted it on the Coast to Coast website. I can probably find it again, but it's really impressive. And I know there are a lot of stories, a lot of attempts by people over the years to discredit it, but I think it's withstood the criticism so far. Thanks for the comments there. Appreciate it. We're going to go west of the Rockies, Bing in Arizona. You're on with Dr. Ketchum.
Hello.
Howdy.
Yes, I've seen a Bigfoot in the southern Sierra Nevadas. And an article in the Tucson paper in 1967, summer of 1967, mentioned about five giant skeletons found in the Reddington Pass area, which would be in the Rincon Mountains east of Tucson. And the people who put out the article was Ripley's, believe it or not.
Yeah, I think that is mentioned in Richard Dewhurst's book that we were going to talk about, except for he got lost somewhere. Fairly current cases that are reported in mass media in major newspapers. There are a bunch of them. I mean, as I mentioned in the introduction, New York Times. And is that part of what got you going, Melba, to get interested in this stuff?
No, it was the Sasquatch stuff that got me interested. But then once I kind of stuck my toe in the water with the giants, it was very interesting because I did go and read all those articles, and there's literally hundreds of them, you know, where remains have been found and, you know, that are way larger than any human was living back, you know, in those times.
Yeah, and as I said, there are dozens and dozens of reports from all over the country. It's not like all of these newspapers are making this stuff up. But in each of those cases, it seems like the Smithsonian shows up, takes control of the bones, and then that's the last anybody hears of them.
Same with the Bigfoot bodies.
Have you ever had direct dealings with Smithsonian? Have you said, hey, have you got
I
some?
No, I haven't. You know, I don't think they would be very sympathetic to my cause. I mean, face it, it's just well known throughout the Bigfoot community about, you know, these cover-ups. And I know it's got to be because, I mean, they exist. I've seen them with my own eyes. I'm talking Sasquatch here. And, you know, the government obviously knows more than one little person knows. And I'm not even talking science. I'm talking about physically seeing them. And but yet there's this huge wave of disinformation out there. You get the occasional government employee that will admit to such. I mean, I actually confronted one, and bless his heart, he didn't lie. You know, I said, you got bodies? He says, not here. I said, yeah, but you got them. And he says, well, you know, I can't really talk to you about that. So, you know, it happens. I mean, that's, and I had a scientist from another country contact me also, and even explained, you know, what, that they were actually doing some research on them, and that he had worked for that country's, I guess you could call it their Area 51, their covert scientific things, and he was talking about what they knew and that my genomes were right and, you know, what they were doing. And everything he said was what I already knew, so I know he had the knowledge.
Is Bing still on the line or is he gone? He's gone. The guy, Doug, the caller from Cincinnati, had mentioned, you know, there's ways you can find Bigfoot. You can follow the deer. You've had encounters, Melba.
Yeah, they'll come to you if they like you.
Is there
if they pick up that you're not a threat and what have you. I mean, I went out with habituators the first time I saw them, and, you know, they just came right up. I mean, I had good sightings, and then they also came out at a lease I have down here. And, you know, I've seen them both in daylight and after dark. And you know, it's been a fun trip with them. Some of the stories in the books came from some of my field research with them. I don't call it field research. It's just playing with them, kind of. I mean, I consider them friendlies, and I, you know, I have an affection for them. I can't help it. They, you know, there's been some fun interaction.
I know when you see these stories, you have a visceral reaction when you read these stories about hunters who are bragging about how they want to go out and bag one.
I'm not fond of hunters anyway, unless they're hunting for food. I can understand if they hunt for food, but there's no other reason to hunt, in my opinion. Hunting for sport is vile. And I'm sure some people won't like that, but I don't care.
And hunting a Bigfoot for sport.
Well, that's another type of human. That's murder. Homicide.
Let's go back to the phone lines. East of the Rockies, Ben in Chicago. Hi, Ben. You're on Coast to Coast AM. What's on your mind? Ben's gone? All right. How about Barry in Florida on the wild card line?
Hi. Hello, George. Great work, as always. And Dr. Melba, I wanted to remind George that your last show with Mr. Politis, the little girl that was found said, "Doggy ate my hat." And Dr. Melba just mentioned that some of these beings that she had researched looked like a cross between a human and a dog or a wolf. Just wanted to see if you thought that was a possibility. And great work on your part, too, Dr. Melba.
Thank you. I'm sure it's possible. There's too many. I mean, there's more Sasquatch reports than there are dogmen reports, but there are a lot of them out there, and they come from credible people. I'll throw a wrench in it. Just about 10 miles from where I live, there's been sightings of what they call Goat Man. And I know personally people that are of good character, that are pillars of the community, that wouldn't tell a lie if you paid them to, that have seen this thing. So there's weird stuff out there. And I'm not attempting to explain any of this away. I'm just saying that, you know, I don't discount people's stories anymore, because I didn't used to believe in Bigfoot. And when I got the DNA proof, that blew my mind, but it really got blown when I actually saw them. And so if they exist, then other things probably exist also. And knowing the people personally, and we're talking lots of people have seen this thing, you know, it's just not a stretch anymore. We don't live in the world we think we do. It's just that simple.
I've told this story before. Thank you for the call, Barry. I've told the story before. I think I might have shared it with you, Melba, the first time we met in person, about something that happened on the ranch in Utah, this ranch that was studied by the Bigelow National Institute for Discovery Science. My colleague Colum and I co-wrote a book about called Hunt for the Skinwalker, and one of the strangest stories, it was the only story that we considered leaving out of the book because it was so darn weird, we thought it was going to cast aspersions on the rest of the material. It was an incident reported by two Native American police officers who had come around the bend at night, and the lights, the headlights from their car caught two images on the dirt road leading into the ranch. It was two figures, standing up, wearing trench coats. They were smoking cigarettes, and they were looking in the direction of the ranch. These officers see these figures. They get out of the car, and they kind of look at each other, and the figures' faces turn around, and they're dogs. It's dog faces smoking cigarettes. The two officers are shocked. They looked at each other, turn back around, and they're gone. These figures are gone. They did find cigarette butts still lit in the dirt right where these figures had been seen, so they weren't imagining it. It's almost as if whatever this thing is, maybe it's many different things, that it can assume different shapes and just messes with us.
Well, I wish somebody had kept the cigarette butts. We sure could have gotten the DNA.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to make of that stuff. You can't.
No, I don't either. I mean, as a scientist, it's all fantasy to me. But you know, when you see things you can't explain, you just don't know what to say.
Let's go to Will in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Will. You're on with Dr. Ketchum.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. When the Russian Slavs first began to migrate north into the land of the White Muromo Finn tribe, who were the indigenous natives in the Moscow area, they saw that they were tall, blonde. They had one of these tall, blonde giants in chains. And he spoke a tongue of the natives, which they didn't understand. And also, there's an interesting book. Though, if you put in Google white Indians and scroll down just a little bit, you'll come to the politics of white Indians. Very interesting. There were white blondes in both northern part of Europe and in the Americas. But the racism has been so bad against whites, especially big, giant whites, that it is just hideous. For example, when the Russians went into Estonia, they put all the healthy, really big Estonians, put them in the train cars, box cars, and sent them to Siberia, never to be seen again. They only left in Estonia the smaller people who weren't very strong. They were healthy, bright and everything, but that's the racism against larger people, especially if they're white, blonde, has been hideous throughout the world. And I need to bring that out because we always think that, oh, the whites are the ones who are the racist against dark pigment. No. In the past, it's been the other way around. In fact, it's been so bad that even when the Gauchis, they were rather large blonde in Canary Islands there, they were made extinct by darker pigmented people. And the whites probably were involved in building the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And if you look, for example, in the Encyclopedia Britannica, the etymology of the word pyramid, they don't know what it is. I was fortunate to learn Finnish as a child. It's my mother language along with English. Pyramid is pyörä, wheel, mitta, measure. And that's what it means. It's a stone clock that measured the rate of rotation of the night star patterns, all 12 of them. You know, takes 25,920 years for all.
Hey, Will,
of them
we're getting way off the path here. If you want to bring it back around,
the point is that the whites there were whites a long time ago, and they've just been treated in an inhumane way.
Let's hear from Dr. Ketchum on that. I guess it would, Melba, it would make, you know, there's enough racism to go around in all directions, but I guess it would make sense that...
What we're talking about doesn't have anything to do with racism. It just has to do with, you know, what was here when and what are they? And, you know, if there were Caucasian-type people here longer than, you know, pre-Clovis, then eventually it'll come out as long as we can get some remains to test.
What I was going to ask is whether or not there would have been reasons for Native Americans, indigenous tribes, to go ahead and kill off some tribe of really big people, regardless of the color of their skin or whatever. There might be all kinds of reasons for them to get rid of them or fear
them.
Well,
like the red-headed giants, they were cannibalizing the children. I mean, if that's not a good reason to kill, I don't know what is.
Right. We're going to go back to the phone lines after this break. Melba, I saw one little article that had been written about you. It says, is Dr. Melba Ketchum extracting DNA from a giant toddler's skull? Do you know what that one's about? A Peruvian mummy, I think, maybe?
Yeah, that's one of the elongated skull. And we have DNA. We have some preliminary results on that. You know, they were human, but there was some. We just did some screening on that with the regular forensic panel, and we did have some dropout, and we did have some, you know, alleles that are not as common. So it'll be real interesting to be able to actually get a genome on that one.
How many of those do you have, these skulls?
Oh, we've got better than 10 samples of elongated skulls. We have a lot of them.
Are they all from Peru, or are they all over the place?
No, they're from Peru.
And
they're quite remarkable, I'll put it that way. We have, you know, I have pictures, and the skull morphology is just not the same as ours. And, you know, using a headboard isn't going to do that.
Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit on the other side, then we'll go back to the phone lines. A lot of folks hanging on with questions for Dr. Melba Ketchum. If you're just tuning in, Richard Dewhurst was supposed to be here, but he's kind of missing in action. So if you run into him, tell him he was supposed to be on the radio. We'll be back with more in just a bit. We were trying to figure out rock songs about giants. Couldn't find them many, but we came up with this one from a country song from Travis Tritt talking about guys who are 10 feet tall. We all know people like that who think they're giants when they belt back a few cocktails or something. We're talking with Dr. Melba Ketchum about her research into Bigfoot DNA, giant DNA, and apparently you folks are fine with the fact that Richard Dewhurst is a no-show because the phone lines are full. When we come back, we'll jump right back into it with my guest here on Coast to Coast AM. Here's a headline from the New York Times, February 11th, 1902. The headline reads, New Mexico Discovery, 12-foot giant found. And the text says, owing to the discovery of the remains of a race of giants in Guadalupe, New Mexico, archaeologists are preparing an expedition further to explore the region. This determination is based on the excitement that exists among the people of a scope of country near Mesa Rica, about 200 miles southeast of Las Vegas, New Mexico, where an old burial ground has been discovered that's yielded skeletons of enormous size. Some of these skeletons 12 feet in length. Melba, that's the New York Times reporting that. I mean, where are those bones? And how can you seriously think that the Times made that story up? I mean, I just don't know what to make of reports like that, and there are a whole bunch of them.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, they obviously exist. I mean, and I've got, you know, like I say, skeletal remains from giants. So, and, you know, they were not easily obtained. And actually, we had some kickback from the museum where we got the samples even. They tried to say I didn't have them. I furnished them proof I did. And then they claimed they didn't have the donation that was made to get their cooperation. So, I mean, there's obviously something trying to cover something up. And I think it's because, it's outside the normal paradigm. And not only that, these things do not fit so easily in evolution. At least the Sasquatch didn't, and I don't expect they will either. And that's the accepted thing that's taught in school these days as to our origins, and if it bucks against what standard, it isn't very well received.
Well, I'll tell you, the Coast listeners seem happy to have you here for an extended period because the phone lines are full. We're going to east of the Rockies, Barry in South Carolina. Hi, Barry, you're on with Dr. Ketchum. What's on your mind?
Hello there, George. How are you, buddy? It's good old Barry in South Carolina.
Good to hear from you.
Okay, listen, one quick comment, then I got a good question for Melba.
Okay.
But listen, George, when you come streaking out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, what is a Scirocco?
It's a hot desert wind.
All right. Okay, because I love your intro. Do you have to read that each time, or do you have it memorized by now?
Yeah, I've pretty much got it down by now. Different variations of it, sure.
Yeah. Okay, listen. Hey, Melba, you sound like you might be from down south. Where are you from?
I'm from Texas.
Okay. That's about as far as you can get without going into Mexico. But listen, here, George, you might know something about this, too. I'm sure y'all might remember Andre the Giant. He was a big professional wrestler with Hulk Hogan and those back in the 80s and 90s. I was lucky enough to meet him down in Tampa, Florida. Anyway, wonderful man, but he was a giant that looked like a deformed type of giant. He was 7 feet tall or something, over 7 feet, and I was wondering if they'd ever done any DNA tests on him, his blood or whatever, to see if he was some kind of relation to something else besides just plain Homo sapiens. Anyway, I'll go ahead and hang up, George. Great show. Keep it up, buddy. Love you to death. See you.
All right, thanks, Barry. Thanks. That's an interesting question. Andre the Giant, he had something genetically going on, didn't he?
Oh, it appeared to. I'm not aware of any testing. It's kind of a shame. I tell you who I'd really like to get some DNA on is that Russian fighter. I mean, that guy is huge and has the most pronounced brow ridge I've probably ever seen, even more so than Andre the Giant. And he's now gone into politics, but anybody that sees that man, he's amazing to look at.
I guess the tallest human was a guy named, or American anyway, Robert Pershing Wadlow, sometimes called Alton the Giant or the Giant of Illinois. He was 8 feet 11 inches and weighed 490 pounds. He looks like, if you've ever seen a picture of him, he kind of looks like an accountant. He doesn't look
right,
like Andre
and
the
I
Giant.
And I believe he probably had a pituitary tumor.
Right.
I believe he died pretty young, if I remember correctly. We're thinking the same article.
We sort of touched on this earlier very briefly, but, I mean, that's an important distinction you need to make in digging into these kind of things to make sure that the sample that you're looking at isn't the result of an understandable and explainable human condition, right?
Yes, and, you know, back, you know, decades ago, there wasn't surgery to treat these giants that had the pituitary tumors, so they usually died fairly young, you know, in their 20s and what have you. You know, that's one way you can look at if you have skeletal remains and you have a skull, you can, if the teeth are well worn and it's an older skull, you know, appears to have some wear on it, chances are if it was a giant skull, it's not going to be from a pituitary tumor because it should have already passed.
Is that the kind of thing that you'd have a whole family of people that would have that kind of a condition?
No, not at all.
I'm referring to sort of these Indian burial mounds where you've got ten of them.
Oh, yeah, families. I thought you meant with the pituitary tumor if it was inherited.
Well, yeah, I do mean that. But, I mean, as an explanation for when you've got a burial mound with 8 or 9 people and they're all over 7 feet tall, they don't all have a pituitary problem.
No, that's the point. That's what makes them real giants. Is because, you know, you're not going to find a group of people with pituitary tumors. You're right. Going to find one here and one there.
West of the Rockies, Richard in Salem, Oregon. Hi, Richard. You're on with Dr. Melba Ketchum.
Good evening, George.
Howdy.
Good evening, George and Doctor. I believe you said that there was a Bigfoot body that the DNA came from in your study?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Are the photographs available of that? The body?
No, not of the body.
Why not?
Don't really want to go into that because there's been a lot of discussion over that, and that's for another time. Let's just say that the body was not recovered, but a piece of tissue was.
Okay, but anyone with a cell phone would have had a camera. Also, you went out with some folks to see Bigfoot. Are your photographs available?
I don't make my photographs available. I have some. But I don't make them available because all you get is, and I'll tell you why. I have no problem saying why I don't put out what I have. The reason is that, like we were talking about all the discussion about the Patty film, the Patterson-Gimlin film, there are still a lot of people that just get very hateful and say it's faked. And the same with the Erickson footage, which is fantastic footage, and it's absolutely real. And people say, oh, it's just a Chewbacca bask, whenever I've got genetic proof it's not because the physical features match the DNA that I ran on it. Plus, it has a black tongue, and people don't have black tongues. And that particular gene is not easily, I mean, it's not been sequenced,
you know,
because it's very different.
Well, let her finish. Richard, let her finish for a second, and then we'll come back to you, okay? Hold on.
So I don't release my stuff. My field research and my discussions with habituators and what I know about them is vast, but I'm not going to go public with it because it gets into arguments just like this, and it's not worth it. I mean, I'm a scientist, and my primary thrust is DNA testing. I'm an expert at that, so that's where I try to stick mostly with what I'm an expert in. And, you know, what I do as far as my field research and any photographs I have and any information I have, that's for my personal enjoyment.
Richard, what would be the point? If she did release some photos, would that constitute proof?
Well, if you're saying you have the DNA, which I'm perfectly open to it,
yeah.
You would show a picture of what the DNA came from. That's the scientific method.
We have that. And it's out there.
Okay,
it's on our website. We have a picture of a dark red female Sasquatch, and we have a close-up of her. She's got a bad tooth. She's got a black tongue. She's got red hair. We tested her DNA, and that red hair was a human red hair gene that was in her DNA. So she matches that.
That's what
she is a female.
Okay, so
we have more than one video of her. We have one of her sleeping. and you can clearly see she is not male. And there were only three females in the study, and she was one of them. Furthermore,
okay, that's wonderful. If I can go look at them, that's what I was asking for.
Oh, okay. Well, go to SasquatchGenomeProject.org and look at the pictures, and you know, you'll be able to see what one looks like. And we did the DNA on it; it matches her physical appearance. So, very much so. Go enjoy.
Hey, Richard, thanks for the call. I think what it does is it sort of raises a delicate point in that you can tell that Melba has strong feelings about this because it doesn't really matter what photos or videos are released. They will be attacked, and some people are going to believe them, and some people wouldn't believe them no matter how good they are. That's pretty much what you're saying, right, Melba?
Exactly. And so there's no point in just opening up more cans of worms whenever, you know, the DNA is the DNA, and that's the best proof we have. When it supports a photo like it did in the case of the Erickson sample, then that's fabulous and wonderful because that is real proof.
Those are rare cases, though, where you have a photo to go along with the DNA, right?
Yes, and it took them 5 years to get it because, you know, they're wary. They don't want their pictures taken, and it was they worked long and hard to get those photographs.
Do you sort of feel protective? Is that at least part of the reason you wouldn't release something like that?
Part of it is that I am protective of them. In a sense, the ones around me at least. I know there's bad ones out there too, so people need to beware going in the woods. Dave Pilates has a point with his books, and you don't just go out in the woods by yourself, I don't believe at least, not in these really rural areas, because there's bad ones and there's good ones. But, you know, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt just like any other human being would be given the benefit of the doubt. And hunting them and, you know, all of this controversy, it only serves to tear down the science and to tear down their existence. So, you know, I think that we stick with the science is the best way to go.
Richard, thanks for the call. First-time caller Matthew in Illinois. Hi, Matthew. You're on with Melba.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Top of the morning to you guys.
Same to you. What's on your mind?
Okay, well, Bigfoot, Sasquatch. It lives about in the woods, particularly. Where does this being live? I mean, I heard the gentleman speak about the tracks ending and things like that. It seems kind of primitive as far as we know it, as media and the like television portrays. But what would be the ideal habitat for this being to live?
Well, that's a good question.
In any forested area, although they've been spotted in every state in the Union except Hawaii. So they can live anywhere because they're so good at concealment. But the higher number of sightings occurs where there's thicker woods, more wooded areas. Because obviously there's more cover there, and so that's where you'll find them.
And do they have nests? Do they sleep in trees or caves or all of the above, or do you know?
In caves a lot of times, and, you know, sometimes in the open. Like some of the video we've got on our SasquatchGenomeProject.org website is this one sleeping in the woods. And there's other places they go that are, you know, safe for them. So, you know, they're very careful about being found, and they're not that primitive. I mean, I can speak from experience on that. Just don't believe what you see on TV. That's why there's been no documentary whatsoever on my part, because I've turned down double digits of them because they want to make them out to be monsters. They want to make them out to be you know, all this controversy for ratings, and I'm not going to go there with my science because science is what it is. And, you know, it has to be a production, a documentary that would highlight the people that contributed the samples and their stories. Some of them have good video, and it has to be about, you know, what we proved with the study, not that they're monsters and not that, you know, we're going to go chasing in the woods after them, because that's just, that's not going to happen. They don't show up when you chase through the woods after them.
Well, I've seen a lot of these Bigfoot shows. Seems like they're all the same. You get greenish nighttime video and people making noises in the woods and, you know, hey, what was that sound? And sure sounds like a Bigfoot, and we never really, never seems to pay off.
They're not gonna come out for something like that. They will approach people occasionally, and when they do, it's because, you know, you're quiet and, you know, they can read you. They have animal instincts as well as human instincts as well as high intelligence, and they know your intentions before you ever even get there.
All right, let's go to Michael in Santa Rosa, California on the Wild Card line. Hi, Michael. What's on your mind? We're going to take a break in about 3 minutes, so you might have to carry over depending on the length of your question, but you're on with Dr. Melba Ketchum.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, George. I want to say, number one, I absolutely love your show. I listen to it. I work night shifts, and I listen to it every night that I'm driving and doing patrols. Dr. Ketchum, I had a couple of questions for you, and I'll make them real fast. Question number one, I heard about the dog man for quite some time. I had a friend in the military from Georgia told me a little bit about it, and I saw a spoof on it or on a Monster Quest. But regarding the dog man, I was just curious if you might be able to reveal where you got the DNA from. Did it come from a finding, like a piece of it, or was it the body? And the other question,
it was hair from the car that hit it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that.
It was hair from the car that hit it.
Oh, well, I didn't. I guess I didn't hear that part of the show. I came in right in the middle of it.
That was the very first of the show. George told the story.
Got it. Yeah. Understood.
Yeah, there was a. It's in a western state at night. A vehicle that collided with something that looked like a dog standing on two legs, though, and
about 1,000 pounds worth, from what I was told.
That is impressive. The other question I had really quick is there's a video on the internet. It looks like older footage of a mother and a son in the snow with a snowmobile starts off, and later on they're driving in a truck, and they're videoing something they see in a field, and the little boy gets out with the camera to go and look at it, and then whatever it is looks like a big dog. It rushes them, and there's a lot of controversy and speculation as to whether it's real or whether it's hoaxed. And I was just wondering if you had a chance to look at that footage and what your professional opinion is.
I have not seen it, and I don't comment on other people's stuff like that unless I have personal knowledge, because I'm not a video expert, and I think it would, you know, be wrong for me to, you know, comment on those types of things, because I need to keep it, you know, if, like, I know the Matilda video is real. I've done the testing on the sample, but and know more about it than you know, the general public knows. But like on a YouTube video, I stay away from commenting on them for the most part, because you know, that's all it is controversy. That's why I don't release my videos or my pictures, because there's always somebody that's going to, you know, say, oh, it's a hoax, and there's always somebody that's going to say, oh, it's real. And so, you know, I mean, I can pretty well tell when I look at them, but I won't publicly talk about it.
Michael, did I hear you say you're on patrol?
Yes. Actually, I'm over at one of the stops right now. We do a variety of executive protection checks and some of our other assets. I did have one other question, if I can squeeze one in.
You can try. I think we're about to go to the break, though. Go ahead.
Okay. The reality TV show regarding to the Giants, with the two guys that go looking for a historical... they mentioned once that Abraham Lincoln went someplace because he wanted to see some bones of a giant that were found. Do you guys know anything about that? If that was, if that's real?
No, I don't watch that stuff.
I'll tell you this, Michael, is that Abraham Lincoln did write about giants. There's a couple of quotes that, if I can find them, I'll read them after the break. But thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We're talking with Dr. Melba Ketchum about her research into DNA, looking for Sasquatch, looking for giants, looking for dog men, and a variety of other kinds of beings. Interesting stuff. You seem to be interested, because the phone lines are still full, and we'll take some calls right after this.